Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Broken interception.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us on the program. You can give us a ring at 201-939-4513, or you can follow and interact with us on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. We will be getting to your calls. We will be getting to your tweets. We will also be looking to calm down Paul Dottino over the next 60 minutes. Why? It is the first official training camp practice coming your way at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, and obviously, it goes without saying, Paul is ready. The players are ready. A number of them spoke today as well as yesterday, so we'll get into a lot of the different storylines. And probably it's best to start with some of the players that spoke today, Paul. Eli Manning at the top of the list. He addressed a number of things, including what he expects out of the offense, as well as the chatter about his contract. A
couple of numbers we want to tell you about, folks. Eli is looking for a 67% to 70% completion mark this year. You remember when Coach McAdoo got here last year as the new offensive coordinator, they were going to shoot for 70%. They didn't quite get there, but certainly improved what Eli had done before. Looking for 27 to 30 points a game out of this offense, and he was asked about, well, if the defense isn't playing so well, doesn't that put more pressure on you? And he said, look, we expect to score 27 to 30 points a game anyway. That's what we're on board for, and hopefully that'll win games. He's like, if we got to win by scoring 10, fine. But, you know, they're looking for 27 to 30. And addressing his contract situation, all he said is that I hope so in terms of getting it done and remaining a Giant. But, you know, folks, anybody who knows Eli and knows this organization knows the story there. It hasn't changed from the very beginning, contrary to what you have read on occasion from other media over the last 6 months.
And John Mara, when he spoke to the media yesterday, he came out and said flat out loud, and we've heard this time and time again, they do not expect Eli Manning to leave. They want him to finish his career as a Giant. So yeah, Certainly the tone has not changed over the last few weeks or months.
Not at all. And so, you know, I will say this. Eli has done a lot of work in the offseason to improve his arm strength. We talked about this on one of the other shows as well. He went to see some guys who are baseball trainers and pitching trainers to see if he could do some things to, you know, kind of help his arm. I mean, look, he's 34 years old. I'm of the belief, and this is strictly me now, that Eli's got a nice window of four really solid seasons left where he can be a frontline starter. Now, that would take him to 38. Maybe at that point you start thinking about, well, you know, could he be a bit on the decline, whatever the case may be. But there's no reason why he can't be a top-flight quarterback through another multi-year contract.
Well, you're talking about a quarterback, Paul, and you alluded to this. If you look at his numbers from last season, completion percentage of 63.1, which was a career high for him. He had over 4,400 passing yards. Wasn't a career high, but certainly one of his top individual performances. The numbers across the board jump off the page, and that was just year one under Ben McAdoo's offense. And Eli even spoke to the media today, and one of the things he said, Paul, I'm in a different place than I was at this time last year. You could tell the comfort level, I think, is much different than it was.
No doubt. And I'm going to ask you, why? Why in the world was he not a Pro Bowl quarterback last year? And why in the world are some of these rankings that we're seeing during the offseason putting him in the 10 to 12 range? The kind of season he had last year, folks, he was a top six quarterback again in this league like he was a few years back. I just don't understand it.
Personally, I'm not one that loves rankings. I really don't like to get into it because I don't put much stock or substance. I think it's more of a popularity contest. People go more by names than necessarily what they see and the numbers that are out there. But I would agree with you, big picture, Paul, I think what Eli was able to do last season, an impressive bounce-back campaign. Victor Cruz was banged up. Odell Beckham missed time. How they finished is an offense.
Suspect offensive line.
Correct.
Sporadic
Not much of a running game.
Game.
So there you go. You throw out all of these question marks, all these factors, all these inconsistencies. It's a no-brainer to say if everything is full strength and guys stay healthy and they're able to have balance on offense, why would Eli not duplicate, if not improve, on these numbers?
Well, the only reason that I would say that is if they get more balance out of the offense. You
Maybe
know,
he's not going to throw as much.
His passing numbers will come down a little bit. But my contention is that he'll be more effective this year than he was last year, regardless of what the numbers turn out to be.
especially if they get the running game going. You figure the defense is going to now all of a sudden have to come back into the box a little bit more.
You know, I'm real excited to hear when some of these offensive guys talk because, again, McAdoo had a bunch of stuff in his playbook last year that we never saw. A, because the guys were still learning it in the first year of play, and so he didn't feel comfortable giving it to them. And B, because of the problems with the running game and the offensive line, he didn't feel comfortable enough to put some of that stuff out there. So here you are with this giant weaponry. Again, it goes back to the offensive line doing their job, because if they produce and they can be counted on, the sky's the limit for what Eli and Randall and Beckham and Cruz and Vereen and Andre Williams and Rashad Jennings and Larry Donnell. The sky's the limit for what they can do. You know, Anita said the other day, and I said, look, conservatively, if they're a top eight offense, you know, I think that's fine. Maybe even six. And she's like, oh, definitely top five. Well, you know what? The sky really is the limit if things go right. Now, is Beckham going to be healthy? He said today, I quote, asked about the hamstring issues and, you know, what the situation is. Are you 100%? He just said, we'll see. Let me go out there and practice today. So being a little coy about it. Did say, though, he has done consistent rehab on the hammies, continues to try to push them and strengthen them, and he believes that he's going to be okay. And Vereen was the other offensive player who talked out on the patio earlier, Lance. And he said that his goal is to be a complete back this year. A lot of people still think of him as a third down scat back. You know, we talked about how the Patriots used him. My question was, what do you want to show that you didn't get to show in New England because they wouldn't let you? And he just said he wants to be more of a complete back. Also said that the playbook is rather similar, so he doesn't have much difficulties in terms of trying to pick it up.
In fairness, Rashad Jennings had a similar sentiment when he arrived with the Giants because a lot of people claim that he wasn't necessarily viewed as that complete back. And what we mean by complete back also, and I'm not necessarily putting words in Shane Vereen's mouth, but it's not so much that you're an every down back, Paul. It's also the fact that you can pass protect, you can run the football.
Which he does.
You can catch. Correct. That's his M.O. That has been well documented in New England. Very good at pass protection. I think that's probably one facet of his game that he doesn't nearly get enough credit for. And that is something that I think is going to bode very well for the Giants. They want all three of those running backs. No doubt that they can be put in situations when all of a sudden they're going to blitz and they'll be able to protect Eli Manning.
I'll go even further. When you talk about a complete back in football coaching and scouting terms, you're talking about a guy who can run all of the different running plays effectively. That means he can go off tackle. He can run the counter. He can go in the A gap. He can go to the B gap. You want to be able to get a guy back there who shows and makes the defense respect the fact that, oh, you know what? He's back there. We don't know where he's running with the ball. We don't know what kind of play they're going to call. But there are some backs in this league who you know they're going to pound the A-gap or pound the B-gap. You know they can't get outside. They can't run the stretch play. They can't run the counter because they don't have those skill sets, or maybe the O-line doesn't have the skill set to block for it. So, you know, when he says, I want people to know that I'm a complete back, he wants to be able to show defenses that he can run any running play in the book and, you know, put the fear into them that they don't know what's coming. Again, that's great, but the O-line's got to prove they can block it for him too.
Consistency from the O-line, continuity. That's going to be one of the big storylines to watch during the course of training camp to see which five guys emerge, and hopefully the same five will be out there consistently as well as throughout the preseason, which was an issue last season. Before we get to phone calls, one or two other things that I want to point out on the injury front. Number one, Nat Burhey spoke to the media, Paul, and he addressed the calf issue that was lingering throughout minicamp and OTAs. He said 2 weeks after minicamp, he was 100%. He says he's going to be ready to go starting today with practice. And Cullen Jenkins talked about interaction that he had with JPP.
Yeah, let's start with that one first because you folks know if you've been tracking this whole JPP story, the Giants folks, whether it be John Mara, Tom Coughlin, or even some other people have said, well, they've had very minimal contact with Jason, and it's really been text messages. Well, we heard today from Cullen Jenkins that he's actually spoken to JPP. He didn't say much because he said out of respect he did not want to elaborate, but his quote was, JPP is in good spirits. And that's really as far as he would go. But I will tell you, not only is that a good sign that actually somebody has talked to him, but it's also a good sign to me about Cullen Jenkins, who is a leader in that locker room. And that says a lot. If JPP isn't talking to folks and only, you know, texting on a phone, but no, he spoke to Cullen Jenkins. I mean, to me, that says a lot. I mean, you talk about guys who are captains or leaders in a locker room. JPP's been isolated from everybody, but he talked to Cullen Jenkins. I'm sorry, I see a lot of value in that. And I'd like to believe that Cullen, knowing him as well as I do, is trying to talk sense into him.
Well, and I think that you can take it even further in terms of what it means that JPP reached out to Cullen Jenkins or vice versa, because one of the key issues for this team with Antrell Rolgon, Paul, is who's the voice on defense?
Well, yeah.
So if Jenkins is going to be one of those guys that may assume that, I mean, that is a significant storyline or development, if you want to word it that way.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now, Burre, you mentioned about the calf. He did say that he's been doing special calf exercises because he's never had trouble with the calves before until he got to minicamp, and that really caught him off guard. But he is doing certain exercises to make sure that does not happen. I said, hey, you got to win a job here in training camp. You're going to have any troubles with that now? And he said, no, I'm taking care of that. So that was good news from his perspective. Also, he did mention that even though the Giants, and we've told you 1,000 times before, play left and right safety, they don't really play the traditional free and strong safeties that some teams do. Burre did say that for the most part, he's playing right safety right now going into camp. That is usually more of the free safety spot, usually. Now, why is that significant? Well, because there's been a lot of talk about Landon Collins coming out of Alabama not having the range to play the standard free safety spot in the NFL. Now, when the Giants drafted him, and of course they traded up to the beginning of the second round to get him, their take was, we think he's got the range and he just wasn't asked to do it at Alabama. Well, again, with the way the Giants flop the safeties and play left and right and like both guys to share many of the same responsibilities, I get that. But it was nonetheless interesting to me how when Nat Burre came out of college last year, he was drafted to be more of a projected strong safety type because they used to call him a missile. He would charge the box and hit against the run.
And they used him on blitzes as well.
Now it sounds to me like he may be a little bit more of the center fielder based on the fact that he's going to be more of the right safety. So that's a little idiosyncrasies. That, you know, us guys who just can't get enough of this, we watch, we look, we ferret out, just something to watch for. Maybe there's a bunch of fans out there who probably don't care, but
well, we know you care. We know you care. See, that's why when you were saying guys like us, you were referring to yourself, who is in an own category of its own. That's what you were necessarily emphasizing.
I know. Yes. It's a sickness.
It's understandable. Hey, this is the time for the sickness to spread, Paul. It's the start of training camp. So
we
give you some excuses on that front. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. I want to get to one quick tweet here because I think this is a huge storyline and we need to set the record straight. In Reese We Trust at Big Blue United ask, I wonder if Lance Meadow and Paul Dottino woke up this morning with the plan to match outfits today for Giants training camp. So we need to at least squash that rumor. And we should mention John Schmelk woke up with the same exact shirt. There was no coordination on that front. I want to make that crystal clear.
Well, actually, there was some coordination done without you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, this is a new development. That
later on tonight, folks, and the schedule right now is supposed to be 6 o'clock here on Giants.com. Jeff Fiegels and I will have the first Giants live training camp show of the season, the one that's going to be on MSG beginning on Monday at 6 p.m. But tonight's program is Giants.com web only. And Jeff and I did discuss what colors we would wear for the show. And it was Jeff's feeling he was going to go with the blue or maybe the gray. And so I said, well, then, even though I wore red yesterday, this is a different red one.
I hope so.
I would go with red today. So
gotcha.
There was some coordination going, but not involving you.
Not involving me. Schmelk was not involved as well.
Not at all.
So it's to blame Paul as to why he matched me today.
Now, but do keep it to Giants.com. I'm told they may move that time. It could be flexible, but we're shooting right now for 6 o'clock tonight. Giants training camp live here on Giants.com. We will wrap up practice as the guys hit the field today at about 2:30. If you're coming out here to the facility, practice is free to watch. You can sit in the bleachers and enjoy yourselves. It runs for about 2 hours.
And if Jeff Jeff Fiegels is not wearing a blue or a gray polo, you know that what Paul just said was just complete fabrication.
Either so that or he didn't listen to
watch
me.
Watch out for that. Let's open up the phone lines here. 201-939-4513. Christian is in New York. He gets us going on Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I have a question that I'd like to hear both of your opinions about.
Sure.
Assuming that everyone's transition from, you know, their position last year on the offensive line goes well with Pugh, Richburg, wherever Schwartz plays, a lot of people are saying, well, they're one starter away from having a full line. But, you know, from a league perspective, I want to know how many teams actually have five worthy starters on their offensive line?
Well, there's a number of teams with issues across the board, and that's a big reason why they juggled players around. Look at Carolina, for example. The Panthers had a number of injuries last season. You know, they brought in Michael Orr, who had a rough go with Tennessee last year. So there's some questions about how consistent that line will be. Tennessee's another team that had some issues on the offensive line. They haven't solidified their positions. I would say, and this is just a rough estimate off the top of my head, Christian, you're looking at about half the league that probably still has some question marks on the offensive line. That's a big reason why you have training camp to foster competition, to see who's going to solidify roles. So I don't think the Giants are in a unique spot where perhaps there are some question marks or there are some positional battles. A number of teams are going through the same things.
Yeah, because I would say that they have a decent line being one starter away, you know, from a league perspective. I mean, I don't, Paul, what do you think about having a decent line being one starter away?
Well, you know, I went into the offseason suggesting that the Giants needed to acquire at least two top six level offensive linemen. And I think that's what you meant, right? Offensive line? You
Correct.
Didn't mean
that's
defensive line
because
I think
O-line.
You just misspoke a second ago. So that's what I felt. Now, they got one, okay, in Flowers. You know, the late round draft pick from Florida State, as far as I'm concerned, he's a project. He's not a guy you can count on right now as a top six offensive lineman. The Giants still,
yeah,
in my mind, could use another top six offensive lineman. Because I asked for two and they got one. Now that's my take.
But from a league perspective, doesn't that still make them a pretty decent offensive line if they're projected to be one starter?
Do you want to go to the playoffs?
I'm
not being funny. Do you want to go to the playoffs?
Oh, absolutely.
Then your offensive line has to be better than decent. It has to be good. In fact,
yeah,
it really has
that.
To be very good. You want a decent offensive line, you can settle for being on the outside looking in.
Well, and Christian, I would even take it a step further. I would say, look at the rest of the division. Forget the league. Look at the NFC East and where you would put the Giants' offensive line in comparison to the rest of the division. Because remember, the easiest path to get to the playoffs is you win your division. So what does the rest of the division look like? Philadelphia had numerous injuries last season. That O-line did not get fully healthy until the latter part of the year, and they've had some issues in the offseason. They've had some changes. Washington, same thing. Dallas is really the only team in the division, Paul, that I would say you pretty much know who's going to be out there, and they should be able to pick up where they left off.
See, I disagree with you. I think the Redskins have improved it. They drafted Sheriff,
they did
the guy the Giants
Sheriff.
Wanted.
Yeah.
They got Brooke Callahan in to work with that offensive line, one of the great offensive line coaches in the league. Their offensive line will be improved. I don't think there's any question.
Well, but we
that.
Haven't seen it yet. I guess the point I'm making is Dallas we've seen.
That's fair.
Okay, there's a track record there.
Eagles offensive line wasn't bad.
Well, it was plagued by injuries, so that's why there was inconsistency. You're right. The pieces weren't necessarily bad, but you didn't have the group
together. They
were
better than the Giants O-line last year.
It got better towards the end of the year. LeSean McCoy in the running game was not as efficient early in the season.
I won't argue with
that. It got better as the season progressed. And appreciate the phone call, Christian. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's head back to the phone lines here. Andrew is in Wisconsin. Andrew, what's happening?
Paul, hey, Lance. First time caller. Love everything you guys do.
Well, thanks so much for following.
Just wanted to touch on the linebacker position quick. I know we all hope that Beeson is healthy and that he can produce for us this season, but perchance if he misses a game or two or if he does miss extended time, I know at this time it sounds like McClain might be a fill-in, but what do you guys think about possibly sliding Kennard over and then slotting McClain in on the strong side where he seems to have performed better before?
I think that's a possibility. You know, last year Kennard was a rookie, and so the Giants really didn't feel comfortable trying to give him the extra responsibility of maybe being the guy in the middle. I definitely believe that Kennard's a guy who could play the position. Now, whether or not they feel that's the best way to go, or they just want to leave him be, that's going to be something that they'll have to determine if that situation arises. But I would agree with you. I think Kennard is a viable option.
Sure, okay. And one other quick question I wanted to hit on, too, was the safety position. Now, it sounds like good news that Nat Burhe is back and sounds to be 100%. Why do you think that he might have the edge over Cooper Taylor, who put in time in OTAs and the minicamp so far? Is that based on talent or based on more production last season and exposure? What do you guys think on that?
You want to answer that?
Well, I think partially it is because of the experience he got last season. I know it was a different defensive coordinator, but he was healthy. Cooper Taylor was on the sideline, and you can't overlook the fact that Taylor hasn't been 100% since he was drafted by the Giants. So, you know, even though Nat Burhe is coming off a calf injury, there's been a track record more so with Burhe being on the field than with respect to Taylor. So that's why I would give him the edge. And I think that there's a little bit more versatility in terms of what Burhe brings to the table. Earlier, Paul was talking about his MO coming out of college, the fact that you can blitz him, you can play him close to the box, you can play him deep. I think there's a little bit more that he has to offer than perhaps what Taylor has to do. Now, Taylor may wow us come training camp, but that remains to be seen. We haven't seen it yet. It's show me time for Cooper Taylor.
If anything, I think Cooper Taylor has hurt himself and dug himself a hole because he's been here already for two seasons and hasn't been able to stay on the field.
It's been a problem.
Yeah.
Appreciate the phone call, Andrew. Thanks so much for weighing in. And this is a young safety nucleus. I mean, we've been talking about this the entire offseason. Right now, I would say Nat Burhe and Landon Collins seem to be the most likely combination.
Yeah.
But we don't know what's going to happen with injuries. We don't know what's going to happen in terms of production in the preseason. Things could very well change, but I'm still going with my belief at the end of the day, Collins and Burhe are going to be the two starting safeties.
I agree, and as we said yesterday on the show with Anita, I'm still intrigued by Bennett Jackson's skill set coming off of that knee injury. I want to see more out of him. I'm really going to be looking during the preseason games at what Bennett Jackson does back there because I'm intrigued. I don't expect him to challenge necessarily for a starting job, but I want to see what he's got.
And the fact that he can play two positions certainly doesn't hurt his place on this roster. Let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. That being the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll also get to your tweets throughout the remainder of this program. We check in with Vic in Florida. Vic, what's happening?
Hello?
Vic, are you there?
Vic?
Vic?
Yes.
Yes, Vic. You got
there
the floor.
He is.
What's happening, Vic?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear, Vic. I was
okay,
about to
listen,
say you're a man of very few words,
Paul,
but you don't have
okay?
that type of MO. So what's happening?
Listen, okay, I'm doing okay. I was down and out for a while, but I'm okay now.
Good.
Good to hear.
Why in the world would the Giants get another wide receiver and where they can get another offensive lineman like Kevin Long? What's going on there? I mean, is Kevin Long still available?
Well, you're referring
for us,
to Jake Long, first of all. Well, Vic, first of all, you're referring to Jake Long. Kevin Long may be his long-lost cousin that we don't know about, but Jake Long
Kevin
is the
Long
offensive
was a running
lineman.
Back for the Jets
I mean,
back
Jake
in the
80s. Long. I'm sorry, Jake Long.
Understandable. Well, Jake Long, Tom Coughlin was even asked about this yesterday, where Jake Long did come in for a second visit. Coughlin just mentioned the fact that he's coming off a major knee injury, and they are monitoring his production and his progression just like they are anybody else on the free agent market. That was the exact wording of Tom Coughlin, but there is nothing other than speculation out there, Vic, with respect to Long. Now, you're also probably alluding to the reports about perhaps James Jones once again. That is also pure speculation, nothing official whatsoever based on what you were reading.
Oh, okay. Okay. I got one more question for Paul. Hey, Paul, is Matt LaCrosse still with the Giants?
Yes, he is.
Okay, that's all I want to know. I hope he does good in training camp and, you know, earn a spot, you know. I think he's going to be a good tight end. You guys have a good day.
Wait, Vic, before I let you go, wait, Vic, hold on here. Why is it that that question was directed to Paul about whether or not Matt LaCrosse is on the roster? I'm just curious here. You have some beef with me now?
No, because Paul and I have been talking about LaCrosse quite a bit.
Oh, okay. Listen, I just wanted to clarify. I want to make sure that there's no hostility between the two of us. That's all.
No,
appreciate the phone call.
Of course not.
Okay, all right.
I love you both.
Sounds good. Okay, listen, I'm not downing, you know, Paul knows the 53 roster backwards and forwards, but, you know, I mean, I know maybe the 54th guy here or there.
Vic knows that Lacoste was my dark horse of the undrafted free agents coming in, and you can bet I'm going to be monitoring his progress.
I hear you. I was just giving him a hard time, but we just wanted to make sure. I was just curious why, in particular, that question was directed to Tito's way. Let's move along here. Andrew is in Pennsylvania. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey, guys, what's up? Happy training camp day.
Same to you.
I'll be coming down there tomorrow and maybe Sunday. But I wanted to get on up with you guys. As far as the running backs go, the three main guys, I could see the shaking down two different ways, either A, similar to the Bradshaw-Jacobs-Ward way, or what I'm also thinking might possibly be a better idea is to do it more along the lines of the way the Patriots did it last year, where with Earth, Wind, and Fire, that works great for that year. You know, Bradshaw would come in the fourth quarter and just beat him up after Jacobs had already had his way with them and they were hitting Ward with the passes. But the way the Patriots did it last year, the defenses never knew what running back was going to get the bulk of the carries that week, and I feel it also let them use all three running backs and also allowed each one of them to get into a rhythm, and I think that would be harder for a defense to scheme against. What do you guys think about that?
All right, and that goes to the heart of what he's talking about. When Shane Vereen says to you, I want to be known as a complete back and I want to show that I can be a complete back, that's exactly what you're talking about, because if the Giants are going to use a three running back system, you don't want the defense to know when this guy's in the game, oh, they're probably going to run this kind of play. I mean, other than the third down sub package, when you know the third down guy is got, you know, third down plays that everybody scouts and everybody kind of knows what you're going to be doing. Outside of that, you want to be able to say, doesn't matter which of those three guys are in there on first or second down, any one of them can run any one of our running plays. And any one of them can pick up the blitz if you're going to have a hot read on first and 10. Any one of these guys can go out for a screen or a flat pass. And Rashad Jennings, I think, gives you a lot of that. I think that Vereen gives you all of that. And I think Andre Williams showed he could get outside last year as a rookie, didn't show that so much at Boston College. Didn't know he had the speed to get to the outside and run a stretch play, but he did that in December. So I think he's shown he can run any running play. What I haven't seen out of Andre Williams yet is the development in the blitz picking up situation and also the catching of the passes situation. That's where right now I think, you know, defenses, when they see Andre Williams, I think those are the kinds of things that they're going to say, well, we're going to test him. We're going to see how quickly he's learned.
Though he had more exposure as a receiver last season than he had in his entire collegiate career. So that at least was a positive development. The one other thing that I wanted to touch on, Andrew, you were talking about the New England setup and how they used running backs. But, you know, the one difference is if you go back to New England last season, a lot of times, yes, they did rotate running backs and they enabled those guys to get into rhythm. But we saw games where Shane Vereen got all the carries. We saw games where Jonas Gray got all the carries, whereas I don't think the Giants are going to say, well, this is Rashad Jennings' game.
No,
this
I don't think so.
This is Shane Vereen's game. I think they're going to try to utilize all three in every game. So that's the biggest difference, Andrew, between, I think, perhaps the Giants' philosophy versus what New England showcased last
year. Well, they also had guys nicked up.
They did, but
the Patriots,
but there
and
was,
that led to them doing that, though.
That's true. Injuries did play
Blunt
a role.
Did not come in until, like, late in the year also?
LeGarrette Blunt came in late,
well,
correct.
And after then, he got himself kicked off the Steelers.
And then the other thing was, keep in mind, Jonas Gray, if you remember, had that big game against Indianapolis on Sunday night, and then the alarm clock didn't cooperate, so therefore he was late, and then all of a sudden he's out of your fantasy lineup. So, you know, it really was a game of musical chairs left and right.
One other thing real quick, guys. Paul, I think I talked to you yesterday and I asked you about Corey Washington and Preston Parker, and then I said something about OC. I wasn't saying that I didn't want the Giants to sign him. I was saying that I don't see any reason why they wouldn't, so why is it just being talked about and why is he not already signed a one-day contract? That's what I meant.
Oh, well, in any ceremonial one-day retirement contract signing, that's the kind of thing that the team wants to plan out with the player. You know, he's got plans of whatever it is that he's doing. He's going to want to make sure that, you know, he's got a clean slate. The team is always going to want to make sure that all the media is going to be here that day and they're going to be able to get what they need to get. Because let's face it, those one-day retirement contract things, that simply popping circumstance to say, hey, you know what, we appreciated what this guy did for us when he was here, and we're giving him the opportunity to kind of soak in the atmosphere of the place where he basically built his career. So this is not about, well, you know, there's a problem here. No, if they're going to make this thing happen, they're going to make it happen at a time when everybody thinks they can get the most, I don't know, feel-good feeling out of it, for lack of a
they're
better term.
They're playing in the party right now. They're just playing in the party.
That's all.
All right, thanks a lot,
right, Andrew,
guys. Good show.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's get to a tweet or two before we head back to the lines here, because I know a number of people that can't get to the phones want to make their voice heard throughout the course of the program. Joe at JCS02008 asks, have you seen anything from Flowers yet that makes him stand out from Matthews, Robinson, Jokel, or Fisher, some of the top rookies from last year's class? Hard to say, considering we haven't been seen in practice at all.
No pads.
Yeah. So, I mean,
impossible.
Impossible to really make a drastic statement or anything like that.
First full padded practice is Wednesday coming up next week, okay? So if you really are interested in any of the line play, the stuff in the trenches, the hitting gets done when they're in full pads. First one of those is coming up on Wednesday. So if you can adjust your schedule, that's the one you want to be at.
And that also coincides with the day in which Paul DeTino will be signing autographs outside for the fans. So how convenient. Moving along here, Oakland Mike at Mike_Har. Don't count Cooper Taylor out. Was good in a few snaps before the preseason injury. Has height and speed. He ran a 4.49 40-yard dash.
2 years on the team, 2 years on injured reserve, without an appearance in a regular season game. Cooper Taylor has a lot to prove to this team. It's not just, okay, we saw what you did in college, and that's why we drafted you. No. He's got to not only prove that he knows Spags' playbook, because now there's a new defensive coordinator in town, so whatever he learned the first 2 years while he was here, he's back to zero. So that's first. Second, he's got to prove he can stay on the field. And I like the guy. He's a really good kid. And I understand when they drafted him, there were some roles that he could play. But ultimately, if you cannot prove to be reliable, and that is be on the practice field, get into the games whenever we call your number, you're fighting an uphill battle. And he's got 2 years now of IR on his resume. That's usually not a good thing.
You mentioned about learning a new defense, Paul. I'm curious, though, do you think the fact that it's a new head of the defense, could that help somebody like Cooper Taylor? Because it's essentially walking into a clean slate. So while he does have the injury baggage, Spags hasn't been around for that.
You could say that if he had at least played and he had some experience under his belt that he could still draw off of. He hasn't played. Lance, he's had two years of bookwork.
Of course, big stumbling block.
That to me, I mean, think about it. This is a football player now who hasn't played football, really, in 3 years. That's not an easy thing to do.
I want to throw two other players out, not to necessarily say they're exactly like Cooper Taylor, but you know, we had similar conversations with guys like Ramsey's Barden and Adrian Robinson, where every time it looked like the opportunity was knocking on the door, Paul, injuries held them back.
And, you know, how many times does Tom Coughlin have to say it? I mean, we've heard it so many times, it's almost like a recording in the back of our heads. When there's an opportunity, guys have to step up and take it. And if you're not available, you just can't do anything about it. You can't help yourself if you're not on the field. I mean, folks, it's not that hard to understand. So, look, if you like Cooper Taylor, I get it, but understand that he has a mountain to climb.
Lance Meadow, Paul DeTito here with you on Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's head back to the lines, 201-939-4513. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, great to talk to you guys. I'm getting psyched. They're intense there, as I could feel the training camp starting there.
Joe, getting down here this morning, almost burned out my emergency brake.
I whatever, Paul. I don't know like you. Before a game, boy, do I get tense and everything. I'm saying, I you know what I mean? I get psyched.
Well, Paul's like that before a practice. So when you get in that category, Joe, then you can start comparing notes here.
Okay, I want to talk first comment on what you said about Eli and standings, like you said, Lance, that don't bother me as much. I'm more concerned about Eli getting into the Hall of Fame. He has two Super Bowl victories, I know that, and I believe there is a quarterback with two Super Bowl victories that's not in there, so I forget who it was. So, but I think the big thing behind that is his interceptions that he had, and he has to get them under control and that. So, I mean, you could spend the whole show on this. Is Eli going to be in the Hall of Fame right now and everything like that? So,
Eli, let me just say this to you. Eli didn't just win two Super Bowls. He won the MVP in both games.
Yeah, I know. I hear a lot of fans, like especially I hear a lot of Eagle comments and say when it comes to them Super Bowls, they say, oh, the defense has won them games. You know what I mean?
Oh, really? Yeah. So
yeah, I hear a lot of that bullshit. You know what
Whoa, that's not going to work.
We got to watch the language here. We understand the passion, but we want
Joe,
we'll talk
to you again tomorrow.
Yes.
Take care.
Appreciate the phone call, Joe. Got to take it easy there. But in terms of Eli Manning in the Hall of Fame, you know, he was right that there are quarterbacks that have decorated resumes and haven't necessarily made their way to Canton yet. We got a few more years, though. I mean, who knows what Eli Manning has in store? And this was something we talked about, Paul, off the top. I mean, not only do we think that he could be productive for a few more years, I mean, we think that this offense is going to be extremely productive, and that helps elevate the status of a quarterback.
I would be absolutely flabbergasted if Eli Manning did not wind up in Canton. And I say that right now, if he were to retire today, I think his resume is good enough to do it. So the rest of that stuff is bird doo-doo. How about that?
And that is the polite way to refer to the other word that was brought up. And we do apologize for the youngsters and anybody else for that term that was brought up earlier in the program. Moving along, we've got Lannon in Maryland. Lannon, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Hi.
Oh, Len, excuse me. Okay, I called you Lannon.
Yeah.
But,
Len. Well, that's okay.
Yes, I was like, that voice sounds so familiar.
I always do that, Lance, because the first couple of years I kept referring to you as John, so you
okay.
got me back.
Understandable. Well, you know, listen, you know, I'm only going by the names that are on the sheet here, so but that's fair enough. I recognized your voice. We will now correct the
Good.
Term, and
Thank
now
you.
We can address you appropriately. So what's happening, Len?
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Well, the long, 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 extra long off season is over. Finally. And before I go much further, just let me say, first of all, you know, let's change the tenor of next year's off-season programming on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And coming off a playoff appearance, I think the conversations will be, a lot better than we've had in the past. But listen, kudos to you guys for getting us through the off-season. Lance and Paul and Anita and John, great job. Really, really,
well,
really
so much
terrific
for watching.
Job. Appreciate your work.
And by the way,
pass that on to John and Anita, if you would.
Well, we'll pass it on to Anita. I don't know about John, but anyway.
And before you go any further, Len, I just want to let you guys know, everybody out there, because it's the opening weekend of training camp, we're going to have a special Big Blue Kickoff Live. John and I are going to do a show tomorrow on Saturday and then also on Sunday. Both of the Big Blue Kickoffs Lives will be at 12:30 to 1:30 on Saturday and Sunday. Again, that's only because training camp has just opened up. We decided you guys seem to really be loving what we're doing, and we're trying to give you as much as we can. So we are going to be here tomorrow and Sunday as well. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for doing that. We really do appreciate that. Well, here we go. I'm looking at I'm wishing and hoping and praying for 10-6. I think we can get there. 4-2 in the division and 10-6 overall. And I think if we can be 5-5 coming out of the New England game, we get a bye week, and then we got six left starting Thanksgiving weekend in Washington. I think we can roll from there, particularly if we're if we're healthy. And our stars are playing like stars. Our core players are playing like our core players. And Eli's healthy. I think we can make a run. You know, maybe we get JPP back for that, toward the end of the season. Maybe we get Will Beattie back toward the end of the season to help out a little bit. And
Len, I caution you of one thing, though.
I think we can make a run.
I want to caution you, Len, of one thing that's very, very important here because of the way the parity is just driving this league left and right these days. 5-5, and even if you get to your 10 wins, you really got to look at those stupid tiebreakers because it's not just, the five you win, but which five. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you could say to me right now, 5-5 puts them in a decent spot, and I'm going to say, okay, but what if the five losses are all NFC losses?
Yeah, I got
or
you.
Within the division.
Or in the division.
Yeah, for sure.
And they're heavy in the division early in the season.
Very. It's seven games early on.
So I would probably say to you, 5-5, no, I don't think I'd want to be anything worse than 6-4, considering the Dallas and the Washington and the Philly and the Dallas game all in that first half, of the
yeah.
schedule.
Yeah, well, that's good thinking. It's hard to argue with that, Paul. Let me just kind of explain where I was coming from with that. I think it's going to take a little while for this offensive line to get together. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We got 17 offensive linemen under contract. I think Beatty is probably going to be on some kind of list before the day is over, and we're probably not going to see him until at least halfway through the season.
Sure.
The four guys we're counting on, they're all playing new positions, or at least new positions with the Giants. It's going to take time for that to gel. I don't think, Paul, I agree with you. I don't think the fifth offensive lineman is on this team yet. I hope not. You look at John Jerry and Marshall Newhouse. I mean, these guys have been cut three times as starters, four times if you count Jerry with the Giants last year. We're not looking forward to him starting. Who knows about the Canadian guy? We got a rookie seventh-round draft choice. I mean, the rest of the guys, throw them in a hat and pick one out. So I think it's going to take time for that offensive line to really gel, and that's going to be the important part early season to let Eli move along. But, let me just end with this. Go Giants, and let's keep Eli healthy. If Eli steps on the field on Sunday, as you know, we got a shot. Hey, thanks, guys.
All right, Len.
I'm looking forward to the season, and thanks for the weekend programming in advance.
Sounds good. Appreciate the phone
call.
Great,
Len. Thank you.
And I brought this up earlier. I mean, the key here is at least Flowers, if there's any blessing in disguise here, Paul, was inserted early in the spring as opposed to Beatty getting hurt in the preseason. So he's already been learning the mechanics, the language. Now it's the pads being put on. He's getting comfortable left tackle. Richburg has had plenty of experience at center going back to college. Pugh is, yes, taking over a new position. Schwartz has had experience at tackle and guard. And then Newhouse has experience at tackle. It's just a matter of how he's going to mesh, obviously, with a new group of guys here with the Giants. But I think the key component here is, regardless of the personnel, let them start working as one unit as of today in training camp, something that the Giants have not had a luxury to go by in the last few seasons because somebody has gotten hurt either early in training camp or early in the preseason.
One of the biggest things that an offensive line has to have, and this goes totally aside from the physicality, from the talent and the skill set, and even the intangibles of understanding the playbook and running the right plays, it truly is a chemistry-driven unit. And one of the things that I know that Pugh and Richburg have, despite the fact that they're playing different positions this year, those two guys seem to have it. I know Pugh is working very hard to get that with Flowers. So that would mean your left tackle, your left guard, and your center at least are starting to get some kind of melding at this point. Now, Pugh said something yesterday that I'd like to reiterate. Because I think it speaks volumes for how he's stepping up and wants to be the leader of the offensive line. He's telling folks that he has spent time looking at the 2008 Giants footage because he is so impressed with what Richie Seibert did and so impressed in what Chris Snee did and how those guys, David Deal, he loves watching those guys. He said they were so mean, they were so nasty, they were so tough and so physical, and a lot of people weren't giving them credit. But for those who knew the game and watched the game, he said, you could see when they played other teams, especially late in the game, they didn't enjoy playing the Giants offensive line because they were getting after it, and they were all brothers, and one for all and all for one, and everybody had each other's back, and they had a certain feistiness about them. I love the fact that Pugh has studied that. I think that's great. I think it's great that David Deal is part of the Giants broadcast team and he's around the facility. I think it's great that Chris Snee took time during the offseason to help look at footage of the young offensive lineman and kind of help Tom Coughlin out with some things that he saw and that he could possibly use to help these guys along. And he has been around the facility as well.
And Sean O'Hara has been around the facility.
Sean O'Hara, another announcer, yep, who's also been around the facility a lot. So there's three of the Giants' Super Bowl champion offensive linemen who have had presence here as these young guys are trying to make their way and look up to those Super Bowl champions. I got to be honest with you, folks. I may be saying, speaking too much to this, but I think there's some value there. I really do.
Well, I think you hit on an interesting point, Paul, and maybe this is not necessarily in the short-term future for the Giants, but at least a long-term future from a fan's perspective. Based on what Pugh was telling you, the fact that you have those three guys playing next to one another, but also draft picks that the team has invested in over the last 3 years that are going to grow up together, yeah, similar to that 2008 line. Right. I think that bodes well for not just this season, but seasons to come for the Giants, because it's not so much about having a strong line. It's a line that you can maintain over the course of years.
Hey, let's not kid ourselves. Richburg was a two. Pugh was a one. Flowers is a one. If these guys aren't starting for the Giants' offensive line for the next 5, 6, 7 years, they should all not only get past their rookie contracts, but they should all get second multi-year contracts in a perfect world and be together now like the Dallas Cowboys line has been together for the last 4 years.
And they did it also with draft picks, if you look at some of their key components. Giants are trying to model it the same way. Let's head back to the phone lines here as we move along on Big Blue Kickoff Live. David is in North Carolina. Dave, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I'll try to be quick. I've got 3 or 4 points I want to touch on, and no offense, Lance. I wanted to kind of get Paul's opinion on these calls.
No offense, Dave.
I always enjoy his insight, even though sometimes I don't agree. And I'll start with the offensive line, since Lynn kind of ended with it. Lynn's one of my favorite callers, but I'm not as optimistic about this team, the 10-6. Unfortunately, I wish I was. I mean, I'm still excited just because I love the Giants in football. But let's start with the O-line. I hear you guys talk about it's so nice to have the versatility along the line, guys that can play different positions. But to me, in reality, you want your versatility coming off your bench. I want starters that have a position and play there. And my worry is not only do we got guys playing new positions, we don't have a solid foundation of who's playing where yet, but what happens in week 5, 6, 7, 8, whenever it is that Will Beatty comes back? Let's say Eric Flowers is playing well on the left side. Then what do you do? It's just not so simple to take Flowers and then put him on the right side and think it's all going to work magically. I don't think Will Beatty can play right tackle if Flowers is playing well on the left side. I remember Will Beatty trying to play right tackle, and I still have nightmares of a Minnesota Viking game when Robert Edwards stole his lunch time and time again. So that worries me.
Well, Dave, keep in mind, I don't mean to cut you off. I'll let you continue. I'm sure Paul can add more to my point. Remember, David Deal got hurt, Paul, a few years ago, and when he came back, he became like that swing type of offensive lineman. He didn't assume his starting job back. So I don't know if you could go under the premise that Beatty comes back, let's say, hypothetically, and all of a sudden the Giants move him back and then try to move Flowers out. I think it really depends on how the offensive line is performing at that time, Dave.
I think you're worrying yourself a little too much. Don't worry about Will Beatty. You know why? Because he's going to wind up on PUP this afternoon, and he's going to miss at least the first half of the season, and let the chips fall where they may. And if the line's playing really well when he gets healthy, maybe Will Beatty doesn't play. I mean, seriously, why screw it up?
Stress the Beatty. That was just a point. I mean, I'm like you. That's just an extra piece, and you worry about it when he gets here. My main point is, with so many moving parts, I mean, with Justin Pugh going from right tackle down to guard, even if he is better suited there, it's a change. And I sit here and I look, you know, that we get James Jones, and I'm sitting here looking at, I mean, my goodness, at the weapons potentially we have in the receiving game. Are we going to have enough time to get it to him? And the other part of the offense that I'm not as high on it as a lot of people is our running backs, and it's because of Rashad Jennings himself. It's because Andre Williams is so young. And again, to Shane Vereen's point, kind of like the reserve offensive lineman I was talking about, I mean, there's a reason Shane Vereen doesn't consistently get a bulk of the carries with the Patriots. It wasn't because Bill Belichick always wanted to play a chess game. It's because he's not a starting caliber 20, 25 carry running back, because there's very few of them. And so, to me, yes, he's great out of the backfield, but I'm not as sold as you are, Paul, on his pass protection. I think Jennings is our best pass protector, but with Jennings, maybe I'm worrying too much again, but his health is, to me, a huge concern there. So I'm not as high on our running back as some others are.
Well, here's what I would tell you. There is no question that Vereen is a very, very good pass protector. He showed that time and time again in New England. And there's no doubt that Jennings is good enough at it that when he can stay on the field, you're right, that's fine. Andre Williams is a learning player. He certainly got a little bit better at it from when he got here, because at Boston College, they didn't ask him to do it at all. So don't necessarily turn your back on him, because that's why a rookie's a rookie. There are things he's got to be taught, and there are things he's got to learn, especially if they didn't tell him when he was in school. So give him a chance now in year two, and I'm with you. I feel very skittish if Andre Williams is in the backfield and Eli Manning's going back to pass. I understand that feeling. However, that doesn't mean that Andre Williams in year two as a pro can't learn and pick it up and potentially wind up becoming decent at it. Look, Tiki Barber was horrific in terms of picking up the blitz when he started in this league. And it took him several years to get good at it, and then he became really good at it. And I would present that to you before, you just write off Andre Williams as a pass protector. The other thing I would say to you is this. And it's the only reason that I'm not on board with what you're saying about the versatility of the starting offensive lineman. When the Giants drafted Richburg, he was a center by trade, and he's back now at his natural, original position where he always should have been. I don't think he's going to have much trouble picking it up at all, because it's like riding a bike. He played there, and he was supposed to be an NFL center from the get-go. So I don't think that's a big deal.
But
you know what? In today's NFL, you don't get to gel. You have to draft guys who then immediately step in within a year or two, do well, and then get extended contracts, and that's their opportunity to gel. It's not like the old days, man. When I used to cover this team back in the 80s, you had linemen who were here 6, 7, 8 years, lock, stock, and barrel. They were together.
Right.
Now a lot of guys skip town. But here's what I want to say to you.
That unit we just talked about was so good, they didn't miss.
Absolutely.
Out of position and constantly changing position.
But I think
maybe occasionally David Deal.
Pugh's in his best position now, too, though. Remember, when they drafted him, the scouting report on Pugh was good, competent NFL tackle, Pro Bowl guard. That was the scouting report that I got on him when he came out of Syracuse. So they're putting him now where they think he's going to be best anyway. So it's not like versatility sometimes when you stick a guy out of position. Look, they stuck Pugh out of position for 2 years. And I get that makes you a little queasy. But remember, he was out of position at a lesser position for him. Now he's at his best position. So I think that works in reverse for me.
All right, good info. Let me make my last point, because I know there's, with it being training camp day, a lot of people want to get in. And this was one I appreciated you bringing up the other day with another caller. When I think about Spags coming back, the defense that I look at is the 2008 defense. You can't look at 2007, because that's an unworldly defensive line that we may never see again.
Yeah.
But you look at 2008, and we lost OC in the preseason. So, we had, newer safeties, because you lost your Burrell Wilson that offseason.
Yep.
So now you've got James Butler and Michael Johnson. You had two solid corners and Ross and Webster, and you've got two solid corners here. Again, linebackers, not the greatest, but you had a leader in Pierce. But what I look at on that defense, Paul, there was a superstar. And that superstar was Justin Tuck. And, yeah, he only had 12 sacks that year, but he had 67 tackles. And the team as a whole had about 42. And there's only one man on this team, well, he's not on the team right now, that can play that type of defense. Justin Tuck was amazing that year, even with only 12 sacks, and that's Jason Pierre-Paul, because as you mentioned the other day, everybody wants to whine and complain that he doesn't get to the quarterback. But how many defensive linemen, and Pierre-Paul's had two or three seasons of this, 60-plus tackles, almost approaching 80 tackles as a defensive lineman. I don't care. And listen, I'm intrigued with Kerry Wynn. I want to see what DeMontre Moore does, but nobody can produce that, and that's what we need on this defense to even come close to 40-some sacks and to be effective, in my opinion. I'll take it off there. Listen to your comments. Paul, Lance, appreciate it. Let's go, Jeff.
All right, Dave, appreciate the phone call. I think we get a little too caught up with the sacks, though, as I've said time and time again. I mean, granted,
well,
it's
important. Well, he talked tackle numbers, too.
Correct. He was throwing out tackle numbers.
JPP puts up good ones.
He also threw out 40 sacks, and I don't know if there's a golden number, Paul, that you need to reach in order to be an effective defense.
I do think there is, and I do think that quarterback hits and pressures have to be put into that equation
pressures,
as well.
I would agree.
I think all three of them.
Well, but the pressure number is what I'd say you'd want to hit more so than you're worried about necessarily the sacks.
Well, the difference is usually the sack has a better chance of leading to the turnover or the big play than the pressure does. A quarterback can be pressured into throwing a pick, but a lot of times the sack winds up being a strip fumble, and that's an immediate turnover, which changes field position even better because you don't have to worry about the ball going downfield to be picked. You're getting the ball in their backfield. So, yeah, the sack is a big deal. My contention is that to be an adequate defense, the kind of heat that you have to supply is going to result somewhere in the neighborhood of 42 to 45 sacks. Okay? I thought that with a healthy JPP, the Giants could break 50 sacks this season. That's obviously not going to happen now. Do I think they've got enough between the rotating defensive ends, the fact that Jonathan Hankins is a pretty good pass rusher for a defensive tackle. The fact that I believe Kennard can be useful on the blitz, the fact that I think Spags will use that safety blitz like he used to use in the past. Do I think the Giants can reach 40-plus sacks? I do. I really do. Of course, that does rely some on what Kerry Wynn is supposed to be able to continue to do, what he showed us based on what we saw in December. It's going to rely on DeMontre Moore's continued improvement, which, cross your fingers, you know, he's been here for a couple of years now. It's time to make it happen. And quite honestly, I don't know. He's strictly a wild card, and it's gravy if you can get something out of him. But Odighizuwa, I'm intrigued.
No, he can play multiple positions.
I'm intrigued.
That's what I think makes him intriguing. One thing I did want to know with respect to the sacks, keep in mind, top seven teams last year in the NFL who were up there in sacks, only one team made the playoffs. So that's why I keep throwing out, sacks are important,
well,
Paul.
The question wasn't playoffs. The question was to be a solid defense.
Well, but you do want to make the playoffs, though, too.
Well, sure you do.
I mean, that's
the
goal.
But if you're going to compartmentalize, you know, certain things and just say, look, this is the unit we're just talking about, you want to be over 40, for sure.
Listen, I'll take over 40 in a heartbeat, but if you're going to look at last year's defense, this year's defense, you want to throw in 2008's defense, I think the drastic improvement needs to come in stopping the run more so than everybody being caught up in QB pressures. And
absolutely, no doubt. See, the thing, here's the problem with a question like that. The problem is you isolate the question, you isolate the stat, you isolate the unit, and the fact is everything has a domino effect on everything else in this game. That's why the NFL is so great. That's why football is the greatest game in history, because pro football is so intertwined. It's a spider web. Every single play is a spider web. And the offense and the defense, they got to work together. Special teams has to work together. It is by far the greatest game that was ever created. And that's exactly why. And so the question does the game an injustice when he says, well, okay, how many sacks do you have to be a good team or to be a playoff team? I get it. So my answer to you is you want to have over 40 sacks, but that's got to be in conjunction with a whole lot of other things.
Facets.
That's just one component that I'd like to see happen for a good defense.
That's why, to me, this stat about Justin Tuck's tackles and JPP's tackles, that to me is a more telling number because that incorporates getting to the quarterback and stopping the run more so than necessarily just stopping the quarterback. I want to squeeze in one or two more callers before we wrap up the program. Jeff is in New York. Jeff, what's happening?
Hey, thanks, guys. A couple of months ago or so, a former Giant defensive back sort of halfway criticized the Giants because he didn't believe that their conditioning program, the sports medicine or the physical conditioning program, was up to par with some of the other teams around the league. And from your perspective, are the Giants in a cutting-edge situation with sports medicine, with physical conditioning? Is there any reason why the offensive line just last year just seemed to have one injury after another? Is it because Giants aren't being as proactive or becoming more reactive in terms of how injuries are dealt with? What's your perspective on that?
Well, Jeff, Tom Coughlin and John Mara were both asked about this yesterday, and they both indicated that they believe they've come a long way. And personally, I've seen it too over the last few years. You look at the GPS, how they've incorporated that. There's now additional stretching in between practice, after practice. So I think they have looked for ways to improve the overall game plan. You were referring to the offensive line injuries, but you know, let's go back to last season. Jeff Schwartz, we're talking about an ankle injury, a broken bone. You know, that's not a soft tissue injury. So no matter how advanced your technology is, I don't know if you're necessarily going to prevent broken bone injuries. If you want to talk about hamstring pulls here or there, certainly I think you could always make strides in that category. But when guys, you know, make significant tears or they break bones, no matter if you have the most advanced technology or you have no technology, I don't know if you're necessarily coming a long way in preventing those type of injuries.
Okay, I just wanted to see how the Giants were dealing with it now versus how they were dealing with maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So what you're saying is they're moving forward with this.
Absolutely. I mean, even you go based on what they're incorporating in minicamp and OTA practices, just technology to view players, to not just look at how they're doing the X's and O's, but also monitoring the heart rate and all of these other types of things. You know, that stuff was unheard of if you go back 5 or 6 years ago. So, I mean, in a very small sample size, which is what you're alluding to, Jeff, I would say that technology has certainly been incorporated much more so than it was back in the day.
Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Let's finish up the program. I don't know necessarily if I would pick this caller to finish up the program, but unfortunately, this is the guy that's holding on the line. Charlie's in Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul.
Hi. How are we doing, Charlie?
I'm doing good. Hey, I'm sure you guys are excited. Camp's happening. Hey, I think the Giants have definitely come a long way, you know, conditioning and, you know, all that. They're not using leeches anymore, and they're not bloodletting. So they have come a long way. So they're getting better.
Wait, was that a public endorsement from Charlie in Maine? Holy macro. July 31st at 1:32 p.m. Eastern, Chuckles said something positive. We may need to write that down on the wall. Continue.
You should. You should. Hey, and the other thing is I'd really like to have Giant Nation just have a moment of silence, a moment of silence for health, all health. That's what we need. This is the year for it. All health. Just a moment for silence from everybody.
And a bucket of Attica, too. Let's not forget about that.
Yes.
Okay.
And the other thing is, you notice that ODB and Burhe are out on the field. And those are the two people that I sent Attica to. It might be a coincidence.
See what I tell you.
They might not even have used it, but I think maybe they did. So I am hoping that that had a little part to play with these two dudes getting out there. And Paul, you have access to these dudes. Why don't you please ask them if they've been using the Attica? That would be great to know. Thank you. And you guys have a great camp, and all health, all hope, all love. Ciao.
Absolutely. Rainbows and lollipops, Charlie. Nothing but positive thoughts. Appreciate the phone call.
I can't follow that.
Well, he took out the leaves and he was drawing out the Attica. So he sent a bucket of that, as we mentioned, to all the guys.
I never saw it.
You never saw it. You got to do a little bit more digging, more research, Paul.
No,
You're slacking on that department.
I'm quite healthy on my own.
Well, that's good to hear. Well, we know the Nike 5 runs. I mean, it's not even a question.
Every day.
Speaking of technology, you know, if you looked at his doo-op in terms of the shoes, the shorts, he's got the whole nine yards. That's what perhaps we need to put into the Giants mixture.
Can we close this?
Yes, I think we can close. I think we've done enough about the medical industry, technology, and so forth. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets, any tweets that we did not address on the program. We'll try to get back to you off the air. As Paul mentioned, Big Blue Kickoff Live, a special edition Saturday and Sunday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern start. So John and Paul will take you for an hour each of the next 2 days, and then we'll be back up and running on Monday at 12:30. Now, keep in mind, the times are going to fluctuate over the next few weeks. So make sure that you watch the Giants Twitter account, those of you who follow and interact with us, because there's going to be a week where the shows are going to start at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. We're going to go back to noon eventually. We don't want to catch anyone off guard, but we just want to give you a heads up. Things are going to fluctuate. Things are going to change. So just monitor that over the next few weeks.
And as far as today goes, practice starts here at 2:30 at the facility. And remember, again, stay tuned to Giants.com, but we're planning for 6 o'clock tonight on Giants.com. Myself and Jeff Fiegels will wrap up the first day of training camp practice.
Paul with the red polo and Jeff with the blue or gray. So stay tuned for that. Enjoy the rest of your Friday. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through.